I think the beauty and the necessity in having your own business is pivoting, right?
Yeah.
And like, if you don't ever pivot, you're going to get stuck and you're going to get crushed. And so I think at that point, we'll figure out what's kind of working and kind of pivot into that realm. And you see like the good operators do that all the time, right? They always pivot into the new.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, as always, Yona Weiss. Grateful to be here today with another amazing episode with not one guest, but two. We've got Matt Burns and Brandon Rickman. From the Southeast, we're grateful to have you on the show. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. How are you, Yona?
I'm great.
Good I'm to awesome. See you. Yeah, I'm awesome. Always good. Always a good day to do a podcast. That's how I look at it. If I don't do a podcast every day, I feel like the day's not complete. But I haven't done one, like I just said, in about a week or so. So kind of feeling it today. So excited to be here and grateful to get to know you guys a little bit more. Why don't you, first of all, let's, if you wouldn't mind, just tell our guests how the two of you found each other, and then we'll kind of walk back from there. And what are you guys doing together currently? And then we'll walk back to kind of figure out how you guys got started in your businesses.
Yeah. So
Matt, you want to cover that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in the film industry. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I was in the film industry for about 12 to 13 years. And during COVID, obviously everything shut down. So at that point, I pivoted into real estate and I joined a buddy who was a camera operator in the industry, and he had a wholesale real estate company he had started in 2018. And he had kind of just been treading water with that because he was on set, you know, 70 hours a week, like I was working on movies and films. And so he treaded water for a couple of years. By 2020, obviously I think everything shuts down in the film industry. He has time to pour into this wholesale real estate thing. So by about June of 2020, he calls me and says, "Hey, I need some, you know, some people to come help me, you know, if you're interested." And I was sitting at home doing nothing. So I said, "Yeah, I'm interested in coming down, seeing what it's about." And he brought me in. And through that process, I was his dispositions guy. And I had a big list of buyers here in Atlanta I talked to, dispo all the properties. And Brandon was one of the buyers I had. So, you know, we had a couple of houses we sold to Brandon. One of them sight unseen, which he did pretty well on. And so through that process, we kind of got to know each other. We started going to breakfast every once in a while and just talking about real estate and different avenues we could kind of partner on. And I got out of the wholesale game about 6 months later. And when I did that, I just kept in contact with Brandon and started having conversations around other ventures and stuff. And we kind of had like-mindedness and we're in the same vein as far as what we wanted to accomplish in our lives. So we, eventually partnered up.
Awesome. So Brandon, I take it you buy homes for a living.
Yes, I do. So I've been in Atlanta as well. Grew up in Atlanta, lived here my whole life with the exception of college. And so I've been involved in real estate. My dad was involved in real estate. And so I kind of grew up in the construction world, mostly single family. My brother's in commercial contracting now, and I stayed on the residential side for the most part. So I eventually moved over into full-time investing. So flipping houses, wholesaling, buy and hold, rentals. And so since 2018, that's what I've been doing full time. So buying houses and mostly fixing, flipping or wholesaling. And so like Matt said, we got together through that and then got to be friends and then eventually realized there was a kind of a void there for investors like me who were looking for private loans, private lenders for deals. We had relationships with some institutional lending and we had relationships with hard money lenders. But we didn't, you know, there's only a few guys that we had personal lenders. And so we got together and came up with a business to provide private loans for other real estate investors around the country. And we've been doing that now for about a year and a half, I guess.
That's awesome. It's amazing to see the progression, you know, especially Matt, your story pivoting in the midst of COVID, like so many people did, but then finding this opportunity. And now you guys have grown this, you know, very successful business. For our listeners who may not be familiar, can you break down just a very simply, what's the difference, or maybe describe first, and then what's the difference between a hard money loan and a private loan? Like, you know, someone who has no orientation with real estate, you know, I remember the first time I heard the term hard money loan, was like, what in the world is that? Like, I want a soft loan. You know, what a hard money. Like, what does it even mean? So if you wouldn't mind, just, you know, let's keep it very simple. Just break that down and then we'll get into the business a little more.
Yeah. Matt, you may take a stab at it.
Yep.
Yeah. So we do some real estate training as well. And this is something that I always cover in a real estate training classes is, so institutional lending is kind of like a bank or a mortgage company. So it's usually the best rates and terms, but it's also the hardest loan to get. They generally don't loan you the full amount that you need. You have to bring some money to the table. They require loan or tax documents, W-2s, bank statements, a lot of paperwork, and they're not as easy to get, but they are low rate, usually lower than what you can find elsewhere. The next one is what I call hard money loans, and that's bigger companies who have funds generally or their own money that they're loaning from. And so they're easier to get. They don't require all the paperwork, but they usually have higher rates and higher terms. So you might, you know, pay 10, 12, 14% interest on those, but you don't have to jump through all the hoops to get the loans. And that's good for investors who are doing multiple deals at a time, because you need more than just one source of funds and you need to have access to, you know, lots of money in a short amount of time. And then The best, in my opinion, the best loan option is private lending. And really, I tell people, I have people call me all the time and say, will you introduce me to some of your private lenders? The problem with that is that they're private lenders. They're friends of mine. You know, it's friends and family who have either an IRA or a 401k that they can invest out of, or they have cash sitting around, or maybe they've put money into the stock market and then is only returning 4 or 5%. Now, in the past, it was returning hardly anything. And so they want to put their money to work and get a better return. And so they trust me. They know me. They know my business for years. They know I'm going to pay them back, as I said I would. And of course, George is an attorney state, so everything closes through an attorney anyway.
Right.
But a private lender is someone who says, you know what, Brandon, I know your business. I've seen you do this for years. I want to help you and I want to get a good return. So we'll do the loan. So that's great. Super easy. Doesn't require any paperwork for the most part. A lot of times they'll loan you 100% financing. The problem with it is it's usually individuals who have $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 to loan, and then they're tapped out. So if you're doing 4, 5, 6 deals a month, you have to kind of use some of all three.
Gotcha. So, I mean, there's definitely advantages and disadvantages to each one of those, you know, the pros and cons of every type of financing. I think one of the biggest ones, which kind of glossed over, is the timing, right? Hard money loans, you can typically close them out in a week or even less. You know, sometimes I've been in situations that I actually was a hard money loan broker for a little stint in the beginning of my real estate career. And some, you know, lenders can, you know, turn around in 24 hours or 48 hours, you know, if you know, they trust the person and they have the right documentation, the underwriting on the property, et cetera. So that's huge when you're dealing with a deal. And I think it comes back to the term itself, hard money loan. You know, when we talk about buying a property, oftentimes, if you just want to get it under contract, you have to put down what's called hard money. You have to put a deposit on the property, which in many cases is non-refundable. And so that's where the term hard money comes from, is that it doesn't come back. You know, you put down this non-refundable deposit and just to get the property under contract, and that's pretty much it. So you need money oftentimes very, very fast. You find a great deal, you need quick cash.
Yeah, the quickest loan we closed, so in our fund that we have now called Proline Capital, we did a loan in 26 hours, you know, that was our quickest. And that was something that we, you know, it was something local to us. We knew the property more intimately than, you know, it wasn't like out of state or somewhere. But, you know, we typically close, you know, 2 to 5 days is our time, as long as it's in Georgia. And then if it's in a different state, there's different timelines. But we kind of lend in the Southeast and try to stay fairly close to home so we can drive to the properties if we need to, if something goes wrong or something. So,
right. So you mentioned, Brandon, you know, when you're dealing with private lenders, they only have a limited amount of funds to contribute. So, which means in order to have a fund of sorts that you guys have had, you need to have multiple streams of income, I guess, investors or what have you, to fill that fund so that you can go ahead and loan out that money. I mean, how do you go about finding these investors, and are you turning to institutional money? Are you turning to, what type of sources are you guys using? And I know it's private, so you don't have to reveal actual names, but, you know, where are the sources you're getting the money from?
Well, yeah, we start Sorry.
Go ahead.
So we started in the film industry because that's where I had my roots, right? And so I had established relationships there for a decade or more, and a lot of people trusted me in that industry. And then I brought on another partner. We have another partner named Sean, who also raises capital with me, and he's from the film industry as well. He still is in the film industry. And so between those two, we were kind of raising out of that pool, which is kind of a largely untapped market as far as real estate investing, which is kind of odd, but they, you know, a lot of people in the film industry are in stocks and crypto and all that kind of stuff. And that's what they talk about on set. And they don't really do real estate investing on a big scale. So there is some education that had to be done there. But, you know, we had a good base of investors out of that industry. And then last year they had the strike. So when that happened, we had to kind of pivot, and we're starting to, you know, focus on trying to get more like self-directed IRAs coming in this year. We are getting some family office and institutional relationships that we're trying to work on. But we're kind of trying to keep our investors on a smaller scale, because in our fund, we have a liquidity option where it's a 90-day redemption period. And so in order to take on like a large investor that has a lot of the fund, we can't really deliver on that promise anymore, right? So we try to keep people to a certain level to where we can cash them out if they want to be cashed out in the 90-day period. Obviously, we don't promise they can do that because we can't be forced to sell assets and all that stuff
right. For
the PPM. But we try to keep that liquidity option there for people. So if they need to get their capital back, it's a good experience for them, right? So,
yeah, that's great. I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer for a lot of people to invest, especially, I mean, you're not guaranteeing returns. Obviously, you can't legally guarantee returns, but a track record, you know, speaks for itself for a lot of people in terms of wanting to invest or the willingness to look into a different type of investment. What's your experience been like over the past, you know, couple of years or year or so since you guys have opened this up?
On the investor side or on the lending side?
Both. Let's break it down.
Both. Okay.
Brandon, any thoughts?
Yeah, thoughts for the investing side, Brandon, or the lending side?
Yeah, I think it's been, last year was a little bit slower than we had anticipated from a borrower side. I think there's money out there. There's investors out there who are looking to put their money to work as far as investing in the fund. But from a borrower standpoint, I think we've kind of in the last year and a half on the single family real estate side, we've kind of been in an awkward position where a lot of the things that have happened in the market over the last year and a half, you would have expected the real estate market to go down more than it has. I've expected it to. But what's happened is, I think because there's a shortage of inventory out there, and so there's still a demand, even though interest rates went up. And what that did for our business and what we've been seeing is that if you have a new construction or a house that's been completely 100% remodeled and is in, you know, move-in ready shape, it still sells pretty quickly at a good price. And what that does is that causes all the neighbors to think that they can still sell their house at that same price. The problem is the houses that are completely remodeled, somebody spent $100,000 to rehab, and the neighbor who wants full retail hasn't done anything since 1970. And so they still want a high price. At the same time, the investors that we're loaning money to, so the buy and hold investors or the fix and flip investors that we're loaning money to, they're kind of waiting on the sidelines because interest rates have now doubled in the last 14 months, 12 months. And so they can't buy and hold a rental property at the same rate, obviously, as they could a year ago. So they're waiting for the interest rates to come down or the sales price to come down to make up for the difference. And the fix and flip investors that we, you know, focus on, same thing. They're still buying and they're still borrowing from us if they can find the house at the right price. But because those sellers are still looking for a retail price, it's hard to right now to find properties and inventory that you can get at the price you need to in order to spend the money to rehab them and put them back on the market.
100%. And that makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, obviously the markets have been fluctuating for, you know, the past several years. And obviously you guys got in the business in this time. When you started out, you said in 2018, you kind of at a great time in the market. It still hadn't peaked yet, obviously, you know, through 2020, 21. And 22, that's, you know, those are, I think, the times when it's kind of peaked. But I mean, you're still seeing people finding deals and having inventory to lend on.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this year it's actually picked up a bit. I mean, toward the end of last year and then the start of this year, we're seeing a lot more deals coming in. I think, you know, finally hopefully the sellers are starting to be more reasonable and, you know, there's more deal flow starting. you know, obviously the capital markets as well were kind of locked up last year. It got very illiquid. So, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of a release in the capital markets. So once the money gets flowing and the deals start, you know, the inventory comes back a bit, then we're going to be in a good spot for spring, I think.
Awesome. And Brandon, are you still buying and fix and flipping your own deals as well simultaneously?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's my major focus. Where I spend most of my time is still buying and fixing and flipping. And, you know, we're still doing 35 deals a year. In the past, we've done 8, 9, 10 a month. So it's slower still, but we're still finding enough inventory to stay busy.
That's awesome. Where do you see the market kind of heading right now? Obviously, Atlanta is an incredible city in terms of the growth that's happened and continues to happen. I mean, it just keeps, every time I go to Atlanta, it just looks, you know, first of all, there's like cranes everywhere, right? But it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding.
Yeah, so, yeah, I would say,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, you know, Atlanta is one of the few major markets where you can still buy property at a reasonable price. If you compare Atlanta's real estate prices to any of the other major, you know, 10, 15 major markets around the country, you can't buy a house in San Francisco or New York or Dallas, Chicago for, you know, $150,000, $200,000. And in Atlanta, you can buy property, you know, half a block from the best parts of downtown for $150,000.
Wow.
So I think that's helped a lot. And I think this year is going to improve as well. I mean, even with the interest rates just staying the same or dropping just a little bit, you know, we've seen inventory pick up, we've seen some movement. So I think any movement in that direction is going to open things up and people are going to start buying again and jumping back in. So we're expecting 24 to be a good year.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. We're on the right track. That's for sure. Matt, I'm curious to know, you know, you spent so much time in the film industry. You still have any ties to it besides for the actual investors that you found from it? Or do you have any desire to kind of go back to that? Or have you found real estate as your, you know, new passion and just all in?
Real estate for sure is a new passion. I mean, I still love the film side. The reason I got out of it was because of a bank. COVID made that cut for, or gave me a chance to, but it was because I started when I was single, right? And I was working 70 hours a week, and I'm fine working 70 hours a week. I don't care. But then I got married along the way and then had kids, right? And when I had the kids was when the part where it started getting difficult to stay in the industry.
Right.
So real estate's given me time freedom, which has been, you know, huge. But I still love the process of the film industry. I just don't love the hours and the lifestyle. So there is still, along this journey, as we started raising money for the fund and for other things, like I've gotten a lot of people approaching me with film ideas to fund, right? Because when you get in that fundraising, capital raising area, you just get a bunch of deals from different people that are looking for money, right?
Sure.
So I've had a couple like stories land on my desk in the last 6 months, and we're kind of looking at maybe developing some of those on more on the producing side or capital raising side, as opposed to the crew side, which is what I did before.
Right.
So I'm still interested definitely in the film medium and love just the process of how you make a film, but it's not my major focus at this point. Right. So
for sure. Yeah. I mean, and it's pretty amazing when you think about it, you have such a, you know, a deep involvement in something, and obviously the ability through real estate to find that time freedom that, you know, you're so desiring, it's such a blessing, right? And it's like almost a blessing in disguise because, you know, COVID kind of forced that upon you and so many other people. But I think like yourself and many others have found an opportunity to kind of break free from those golden handcuffs, as they like to call it. But I love the fact that you're kind of still involved in that and open to the opportunities of, you know, being involved in a different way, you know, producing, like you said. I've actually had several people over the years, and actually just last week, someone reached out to me if I know anyone who wants to invest in a film. And to me, it's fascinating because like every business, really, when you think about it, has, you know, needs capital to function. And there are so many different sources of that capital. Not everyone is looking for investors per se. They may be looking for different types of capital. But have you been involved or either of you in any other types of ventures besides for, you know, the single family kind of fix and flip? Or is there an idea to kind of expand the fund to lend on different things?
Yeah, we definitely, inside of the fund, we have some leeway, you know, on the PPM to lend on anything kind of real estate related. We can't really lend on like films and stuff, but real estate related. So eventually when we get to a certain size, we'll do some like small balance commercial probably, if it makes sense, you know, and things of that sort. but we're not going to be lending in, you know, different industries out of that fund. We'll start, if we want to do that, we start a separate fund to kind of facilitate that, right? So
that makes sense.
Yeah. And I would say individually, certainly before we started the fund, but individually we have, I was thinking as you asked the question, I invested in a commercial fencing company. Like guys that put in fencing for Walmart around the country at one point. I was a investor in a company that was a coffee producer, and I eventually sold that company to one of the largest fast food restaurants in the country. So that was fun. I've had a few losers too. I've had a few investments that didn't work out well. Now we're actually building a self-storage facility. So I'm an owner of that, but also an investor in that as well. So that's kind of real estate related, something Matt and I have talked about, you know, multifamily and self-storage within the fund or a new fund. But we've individually, separate from the fund, we've invested in other businesses and still get people that reach out to us from time to time that are, you know, trying to raise capital for their business.
Sure. So where do you see this fund taking you, or this business model taking you over the next couple of years? Where do you see it expanding to, or what's kind of the goals?
Well, I mean, 5 to 7 year outlook, we're looking at getting to 50 million, right? That's our goal, push to 50 million. And honestly, at that point, my exit strategy is to turn that into a passive income source, right? And kind of step away and bring in an operator, a fund manager that can kind of take over. Mm-hmm. And kind of make it a passive thing on my side. And, you know, I think Brandon and Sean, my other two partners, are kind of, you know, in the same vein. You know, we'll eventually get a team that we can kind of transition it off to at some point and kind of step away and start doing other things, you know, maybe start another fund for self-storage or multifamily or whatever it is at that point, right? And kind of pivot again. I think the beauty and the necessity in having your own business is pivoting, right?
Yeah.
And like, if you don't ever pivot, you're going to get stuck and you're going to get crushed. And so I think at that point, we'll figure out what's kind of working and kind of pivot into that realm. And you see, like, the good operators do that all the time, right? They always pivot into the new thing. You know, like, I'm wearing a passive investing hat right now. I should have our hat on, but I have a passive investing hat. So, you know, like Dan Hanford, those guys, they kind of pivoted from multifamily into car washes and, you know, pickleball courts. And you have to be flexible when you're a business owner and kind of see what's coming down the line and kind of transition before you get crushed, you know, and whatever right. You're doing. So I think that's a necessity as a business owner, is to have that mentality of, hey, let's pivot into whatever is working at this time. And I think for the most part, private money lending, in my opinion, kind of stays consistent throughout, right? Like, it's always, there's always a need for capital.
Sure.
And it's always a good return. And as long as you're controlling your LTV or your ARV that you're lending at, then you're going to be fine no matter what economy we're really, you know, going into. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Brandon, what do you have anything to add to that in terms of the short-term, long-term vision of this?
I'd say from my perspective, the main reason why I wanted to get into the private lending side of the business was because of the void that I saw, or the need that I saw as a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. And so that's what really drives me still, is I know there's a need for investors out there who are flipping houses and buy and hold investors who can't work with institutional funds because either they don't have the W-2s because they're self-employed, or they don't have access to capital. And so there's such a need out there, and I think there's going to always be a need. I want to be a provider of that. I want to fill that void or that need that's out there. So yeah, I mean, I think having been on all sides of the equation from an investor standpoint, as a contractor, remodeling, doing the work, as an investor, as a flipper, as a buy and hold investor, being the bank is the best of all the above. And so Right. Transitioning to where, you know, we're focused on loaning money to people who are doing all those things instead of me personally doing those things.
Absolutely. Now, have you had any like really bad experiences or horror stories? Because I've heard many stories over the years about different situations where a loan goes bad, or someone, you know, defaults and something like that, or, you know, someone just takes the money and runs, you know, like these things do happen, unfortunately, in the world. Have you guys had to deal with anything like that?
Fortunately, not inside the fund, but, you know, when I first started about 3 years ago, loaning my own money, we had a situation. I kind of got mentored by a person in Atlanta here who was a private money lender, like Brandon was talking about, and she would lend 100% on everything. So she didn't do any inspections or did no due diligence. Essentially, is based on trust with the person that she was lending to, right? So she lends a couple $1 million a month of her own money. She's a big player here. But so I kind of learned from her. And so I just followed the model she was doing. And so we had a situation where we lent to a gentleman who I knew his dad for about 15 years, but I didn't know him personally. and he just didn't do anything with the property. He didn't do any work to it and just sat there for 6 months. And so at the end of it, we had to take it back, but we had lent the 100%, right? So we were lending 100% at that point, me and my partner, Sean. And so obviously when we took it back, we lost some money on that property. But I mean, it was a good learning experience for us because that kind of, again, we pivoted at that point and said, hey, we need to not lend at 100% anymore because obviously we lose money when that happens if we have to take it back. So right. That gave us the, you know, strategy to start doing. We do 70% LTV now. So we have 30% built into, you know, any of the legal fees or the foreclosure process, the whole time, all that stuff is now covered. And it also covers for any kind of, you know, dip in the economy or market that may happen. So,
right. Yeah. You got to cover for things that are unpredictable. That's for sure. Well, awesome, guys. I want to transition now to what we call the final four. These are four questions I like to ask all my guests. And first question for you, Matt, we'll start with you. What's the worst job you ever had?
The worst job? I had a lot of them. I think the worst job I ever had was I grew up in Michigan and then we had a job at a golf course driving range. And it was this kind of mucky, like range 300 yards out. And they would make us pick up the balls by hand. So we had a shagger, right? And me and my brother walk around and had to shag all the balls on this 300 yard property by hand. So that was a pretty not fun job. But a close second to me was I worked at Old Navy out of high school and worked there for about 6 months through the holiday season at a new mall that was kind of close to us at that time. And man, I give major props to people who do retail because retail is tough.
Retail is tough. Yeah, that's for sure. Brandon, what about you? What's the worst job you ever had?
Mine would be when I was in college in the summertime, I worked for a carpet cleaning company. So people would call us and I would drive the van out there. We had the big carpet cleaning machine in the back of the van. No air conditioning in the van in the middle of summer in Georgia. It's pretty warm.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you run that engine, you know, for an hour while you're cleaning, then you get back in the van, it's 1,000 degrees. But we were cleaning usually vacant houses that had been emptied before an investor was going to flip them or a tenant had moved out and destroyed the carpets and we would clean them. So we saw some nasty stuff and it was a dirty, hot, stinky job.
Sounds like it. Yeah, definitely not a fun one. But something that needs to happen. And obviously one of those things that are very, you know, necessary when dealing with carpet. Let's just want to pull out the carpet, but that's obviously more expensive than cleaning it. What is a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift? Let's start with you, Brandon.
Mine is 10X is easier than 2X. I just read that recently at the end of 2023. And we're kind of in the middle of that transition in the company just because of, like I said, we were raising out of the film industry and kind of got us to where we are. But now we need to kind of transition into a new area, focus on the 20% and kind of not totally stop raising out of film industry, but just kind of shift our strategy into raising out of self-directed IRAs and institutional money and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're kind of applying those principles right now as we walk through this fund and it's kind of been added a lot of fuel to the fire. So it's been good.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a very, very powerful book. We've kind of mentioned a couple of times before. Brandon, what about you? What's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
Best book I'd read on business, and I was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I've read all of Kiyosaki's books, but that one was a major mind shift for me. And then I would say, I mean, maybe it's a layout, but the Bible is something that I've read through multiple times, many times, and read daily. And it has absolutely changed me as a person and changed my outlook on life and, you know, how I look at business and how I care about my family and other people. So
Sure. Again,
maybe that's the easy answer, but for me, it's definitely been the most impactful.
Absolutely. No, it is an easy answer, but you're absolutely right. I love when people mention that as the book that's because it really does, you know, for someone who is a religious person, it's mind blowing or not just mind changing. There's so much in there that just is such incredible wisdom for life, for daily life. So third question is, what's a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
Is this something that goes beyond the believable? Like something I would want to do?
Like, yeah. Anything you're like, hey, I would love to learn, you know, how to fly a plane or whatever. I don't mean like fly yourself. Like, I'm not talking about superpowers, you know, if you had one.
I was going to say, so I play a lot of basketball, like pick up basketball. And that's kind of how I get my exercise. But, you know, I'd love to dunk one day. I don't know if that's a possibility, but, you know, that would be a dream, I guess. I don't know.
It's definitely a possibility. How tall are you, Matt?
I'm about 6 foot.
Come on. Spud Webb was like 5'6". Come on. 5'4".
That's what I tell my son. My son's 5'4", and he's like, I'm not going to be tall enough to play basketball. I'm like, hey, look at this Spud Webb. He figured it out.
You only need one person to do it and show you it's possible, right? So
okay.
It's just, you know, practice and determination. You know, unless you're Woody Harrelson, I think it's possible, right?
I would say for me, you know, I'm really trying to learn how, like I mentioned, the self-storage deal, I'm really trying to learn how to be more on the legacy wealth creating side of things. And so I want to learn how to buy and manage multifamily and self-storage properties. Mm. All the stuff that I've done new construction and obviously flipping homes. It's all what I consider transactional. So you find a lot, you build a house and you sell it and you're done. Now you got to go find another lot. Or you buy a house, you flip it, you sell it. Now you got to go find another one. And so really, since I have had a son, he's 13 now, but that's kind of been my focus, is I want to learn how to transition. And I love to learn and read and, you know, try to learn new things anyway. So that kind of lines up with my career. But, you know, how do I get more involved on the operation side? How do I evaluate and buy and become part of multifamily and self-storage so that I can leave a legacy for my son?
Absolutely. And, you know, real estate, holding real estate, obviously not only has the benefits of the equity, the appreciation that comes along with it, the wealth building, but has the tax benefits that whereas transactional real estate does not have. And things that I've seen many, many home flippers who have transitioned into buy and hold and commercial, multifamily, et cetera, for that very reason. So I think it's very smart, good skill to want to learn. And I'm sure you will do it shortly. Not sure about the dunking, Matt, but you know, the you can do it.
I'm racing Brandon. If I hadn't dunked before he gets in multifamily, then I'll be a success.
There you go. Awesome. Well, we'll transition with that to the fourth and final question, which is, what does success mean to you?
I think success means to me to have freedom in areas that most people don't have freedom in, right? Like I was talking about earlier, time freedom is one. You know, I had a buddy recently call me and say, hey, would you ever come back to the film industry? I said, dude, I would never. Once you get freedom in one area, like, it's hard. You can't give it back. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get freedom and you get spiritual freedom, you get time freedom, financial freedom, like all these freedoms that you get. Once you see the other side of it, you're like, I can't ever go back to what I knew before. Right. So I think success to me is getting freedom in all those areas and then staying in that mode and not ever going back to what you knew before.
That's awesome. Love that.
Yeah. My definition is doing what you want to do instead of what you have to do. And so I'm not a mindset of retiring. I think I'll, you know, do something until I die. But, you know, it's getting up every day, similar to what Matt said, but it's getting up every day and being able to do what it is that you want to do instead of having to do something in order to have a paycheck to pay the bills. And I don't have any desire to go play golf every day or go fishing every day or do anything like that. I'm interested in business and investing and helping other people, you know, who are starting businesses, helping them grow and learn. But I think success, success, according to my definition, can happen at any age. You know, you can be 25 or 75. It's doing what you want to do every day instead of what you have to.
Love that. Yeah, that's a beautiful definition.
Yeah, on that note, Yona, he said fishing there, and he didn't mention this, but he's a world-class fisherman, Brandon is. He wins tournaments and such pretty often. So if you get to Georgia, let us know, and Brandon will take you fishing. So,
well, there you have it. Yes. I'll definitely let you know next time in Atlanta. Awesome. Well, finally, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you besides, you know, on the lake?
Well, we have a website. It's prolendcapital.com. So it's prolendcapital.com. And then also, you know, you can reach out to us on Facebook. We have Facebook. We're going to have Instagram soon. We're kind of developing our social media strategy right now. So we're not quite the full presence we want to be, you know, but that's what we're kind of launching into in 2024. And, you know, we both have emails, matt@prolendcapital.com and brandon@prolendcapital.com. We're always accessible if you guys want to reach out and have a conversation. So,
awesome. Well, we'll make sure to put all that in the show notes and appreciate you guys for taking the time today and joining me on the show.
Yeah. Thank you, Yona. It was a pleasure. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Awesome. And to our listeners, thank you all for joining us all the way to the end once again. And remember, the best advice comes only when you ask.
Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn, send me a DM, a connection request, Yonah Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.